from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, shh, 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 quiet, quiet, please. You can hear the Germans are talking. Yes, the Germans are talking. The German intelligence officials responsible for Curveball, remember Curveball? One of the most important informants on Saddam Hussein's suspected WMD. The German intelligence officials say the Bush administration and the CIA repeatedly exaggerated Curveball's claims during the run-up to the war in Iraq. Hey, that's good work. It's hard work. It's good progress. Sorry, got confused there for a minute. Five senior officials from Germany's Federal Intelligence Service, or BND, it's not the Bund, don't get excited, said in interviews with the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, they warned U.S. intelligence authorities that the source, an Iraqi defector codenamed Curveball, never claimed to produce germ weapons and never saw anyone else do so. According to the Germans, President Bush mischaracterized Curveball's... The Germans are old Europeans, aren't they? Just checking. President Bush mischaracterized Curveball's information when he warned before the war that Iraq had at least seven mobile factories brewing biological poisons. Colin Powell also misstated Curveball accounts in his pre-war presentation to the UN, the Germans said. Curveball German handlers for the last 6 years said his information was often vague, mostly second-hand, and impossible to confirm. This was not substantial evidence, said a senior German intelligence official. We made clear we could not verify the things he said. The German authorities, speaking about the case for the first time, also said their informant suffered from emotional and mental problems. Quote, he's not a stable, psychologically stable guy, said a BND official who supervised the case. Agreed an analyst from the BND, quote, he is not a completely normal person, unquote. He was the chief source of pre-war U.S. accusations that Baghdad had biological weapons, according to the Rob Silverman commission appointed by President Bush this year. The commission did not interview Curveball or the German officials. That's good work. But ladies and gentlemen, who am I to throw stones? I have a confession to make. This week, I went to Washington. I was invited, for reasons best known to others, to the ABC, the splendid, I guess, Chicken Little's grosses are going for a good cause, because ABC threw a very splendid party for the departing Ted Koppel. It was his farewell party as the host of Nightline. Yes, and I was there. Go figure. And so were many of Ted Koppel's colleagues, including, just almost said the name, and now I'm going to say it, Dan Rather. And I'm flummoxed in those circumstances, I'm not ashamed to say. And so I confess to you that I blew the opportunity of a lifetime. I did not say to Dan Rather, so, what happened in the men's room with Mike Wallace? Damn it. I only realized it when I was on the plane flying home. So, maybe I would have believed Curveball, too. Hello, welcome to the show.
Change. sky's in mid dark, night bright day. Moon blue.
Moon blue.
Moon blue.
Your heart's just caught up in the moon blue.
Your beauty's seen by all.
Thank you. You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Blue moon, you knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really could care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms will ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold. Blue moon, now I'm no longer alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition. This right here, this one that I'm doing as I speak. The speaking is the doing edition of Le Show, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, I got a T-shirt for the grown-ups in charge. This would be good. Many occasions, it's wearable. The device, which would be on the T-shirt, is a quote from Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt, one of the grown-ups, on Meet the Press this past weekend, speaking of bird flu, but actually applicable to so many situations, past and present. Here's what Mike Leavitt said, quote, "We're not as prepared as we need to be," unquote. Okay, how many years would you like? We elected you for 8. Oh, excuse me, I said elected. We're not as prepared as we need to be. Come on, let's do it, gang. Let's do it right now. We have a winner, ladies and gentlemen, in the Have Lunch with Rupert Murdoch auction. Bill Zanker. Bill Zanker. And the question is, no, sorry, that's another bit. He's chairman of the Learning Annex. That's right. All the money that you paid to go to a seminar with Jerry Lewis has enabled Bill Zanker to be the mystery winning bidder in the online auction for Lunch with Rupert Murdoch. Zanker bid $57,100 to win the meal, proceeds going to charity. "I grabbed it. I loved it," said Zanker shortly after learning his bid had won. "I'm fascinated by Rupert. So am I. But for some reason, I think the money should flow in the other direction." Zanker told the New York Post that with Murdoch, he's hoping for more than a friendly powwow. He wants to expand the Learning Annex overseas. Quote, "I figured what better expert to give me advice than Rupert Murdoch," said Zanker. Oh, well, maybe just sell to him. I think that's really what you want, isn't it? Zanker's first bid appeared to be anonymous, hiding behind an online moniker based on his attorney's address. His attorney did the bidding. Zanker founded the Learning Annex 25 years ago, sold it to another group in 1980 before buying it back in 2001. Sales hit to $14 million last year, and this year he expects revenues to be about $35 million. Until a few days ago, as you know, the reserve bid was $25,000, and they didn't have very much above it. So somebody came in, a couple people came in the last minute. So obviously somebody bid $57,000, and Bill Zanker bid $57,100. Good for you. Good for you, Bill Zanker. Reuters reports that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's former chief, Kenneth Tomlinson, who resigned this month, mailed White House strategist Karl Rove, quote, bragging, unquote, about a push for conservative programming on U.S. public television. Inspector General Kenneth Kahns said in a telephone interview that Tomlinson told Rove of his work to balance the liberal PBS program Now with Bill Moyers with a conservative show. There's a few of them to and from Karl Rove, the inspector general said of the email. They primarily relate to Tomlinson advising Rove and his staff regarding his success in getting a program to be put on the air to balance the Bill Moyers program. He was bragging about how successful he was being. In addition, I saw some general comments relating to how he was shaking things up at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but the email showed no evidence Tomlinson acted with White House guidance. All right, then. The New York Times says the military is falling far behind in its effort to recruit and re-enlist soldiers for some of the most vital combat positions in Iraq and Afghanistan. That, according to a report compiled by the Government Accountability Office, as few as a third of the special forces soldiers, intelligence specialists, and translators that they aimed for over the last year got signed up. Translators, who needs those? If they want to have freedom, they'll learn to speak English. Don't you think? It's a small price to pay. Having your relatives killed and learning to speak English is a small price to pay for freedom. The Army and the Marines fell short of their goals for hiring roadside bomb defusers by about 20% in each of the last 2 years. I wonder why that would be. Sounds like such easy work. Mom, should I go to college or should I sign up for roadside bomb defusing duty? I don't know, son. What do you feel like? News of global warming. Apparently there's some going on from the Observer in London. In 1985, incidents of glacier waters melting, resulting in a flood down the Himalayan mountains, were rare, but not anymore. Last week, scientists revealed there has been a tenfold jump in such catastrophes in the last 2 decades, the result of, say with me, class, global warming. Himalayan glacier lakes are filling up with more and more melted ice. 24 of them are now poised to burst their banks in Bhutan, with a similar number at risk in Nepal. That's just the beginning, according to a report in Nature magazine. Future disasters around the Himalayas will include floods, droughts, land erosion, biodiversity loss, and changes in rainfall and the monsoon. The roof of the world is changing. Eventually, the Himalayan glaciers will shrink so much their meltwaters will dry up. Well, that solves the flood problem. What is your beef? At the same time, rivers fed by these melted glaciers will turn to trickles. Drinking and irrigation water will disappear. Hundreds of millions of people will be affected. All right, then. Okay. Scientists have abandoned a decade-long genetically modified crop project in its last stages of research in Australia after learning that peas modified to resist insects had caused inflammation in the lung tissues of mice. It's only the second time in the world a genetically modified project has been abandoned after a gene transfer from one crop to another. The findings suggest the allergic-style reaction in the mice was triggered because the protein was altered by a natural process. Or by guys fooling around. And finally, in Science Notes this week, the global decline in seabird populations, who knew about that, is of growing concern to ecologists, and researchers now have discovered a new cause. Some may be becoming too stupid to survive. Talk about canary in a coal mine. Climate change may be the root of the trouble. This, according to New Scientist magazine, new environmental conditions lead fish to migrate, leaving the birds that fed on them malnourished. The new research shows that lack of a specific nutrient in red-legged kittiwakes damages their cognitive abilities and could leave them too nuts to find food. Red-legged kittiwake populations have plummeted by half since the 1980s in the Pribilof Islands in the Bering Strait. And this experiment was trying to find out why. So the red-legged kittiwake, lacking a nutrient, is dumbing down. Maybe they'll be eligible soon to anchor local news. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Eat your heart out, New York City. The cost of staging the London Olympic Games in 2012 is set to double. Senior officials organizing the Games say construction costs have been seriously underestimated by the Department of Culture, Media, and Sport. A rise in costs could spell financial disaster for Londoners. The newspaper The Observer has learned that the government has in recent days appointed KPMG, the accounting firm, to begin a reappraisal of Olympics costs. They've surged partly because original projections allowed for 3% inflation, but inflation in the construction sector is now over 7%, and wages in the construction sector are expected to rise substantially as London readies itself for a building boom caused by the Olympics. A senior figure involved in preparing for the London Olympics said, quote, "This has the makings of another Millennium Dome. Not factoring in construction inflation was a massive oversight." Also, outside the bubble, the United Nations, you remember them. Are they relevant again? They have formally rejected a U.S. invitation to visit the Guantanamo Bay prison camp, saying it cannot accept the restrictions imposed by Washington. UN human rights expert says the United States had refused to grant them the right to speak to detainees in private. UN senior official Manfred Nowak said private interviews were a totally non-negotiable precondition for conducting the visit. He told the BBC his team would accept nothing less than unfettered access. Quote, "If you want to hear from a detainee or know from a detainee whether he or she has been subjected to torture or ill treatment, then you must be allowed to speak to this person in private," unquote. "In front of prison guards, they would never tell you the truth because of being afraid of reprisal," he said. Last month, the Pentagon said the UN monitors would be allowed to visit the camp on December 6th. A Pentagon spokesman said the invitation was intended to allay fears that detainees were being mistreated. But there's so much more news outside the bubble. Here it is, Dateline Vienna. Iran has told the UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency that it, Iran, received a black market document with partial instructions for making the core of a nuclear bomb. A senior official close to the IAEA, some diplomats, and a U.S. nuclear expert urged caution over the disclosure, saying further investigation is needed. The report obtained by the Reuters news agency said the agency was given documents, including one on the casting and machining of enriched, natural, and depleted uranium into hemispherical forms, described by one European diplomat as a cookbook for the enriched uranium core of a nuke. The document is not the blueprint the Libyans had. That came from the Chinese. David Albright, a former UN weapons inspector, said the document fell far short of a building manual for a bomb core. Where did the document come from? Iran said it had come to Iran, the document had, unsolicited from people in the black market set up by the father of the Pakistani nuclear bomb, A.Q. Khan, described in this article as disgraced, but of course being held in house custody in Pakistan, where only the Pakistanis are allowed to question him. Not the Americans. The IAEA said this warrants further investigation. Okay, well, let's call the Pakistanis and ask them to question the former the father of their nuclear bomb. Harsh interrogation techniques attributed authorized by top officials of the CIA have led to questionable confessions and the death of a detainee since the techniques were first authorized in mid-2002, according to ABC News. The techniques include the attention grab, the attention slap, the belly slap, long time standing, the cold cell, and waterboarding, in which a prisoner is bound to an inclined board, feet raised and head slightly below the feet, cellophane is wrapped over the prisoner's face, and water is poured over him. Unavoidably, the gag reflex kicks in, and a terrifying fear of drowning leads to almost instant pleas to bring the treatment to a halt. Some rough tactics. CIA officers who subjected themselves to the waterboarding technique lasted an average of 14 seconds before caving in. But not Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He lasted between 2 and 2.5 minutes. The person believes they're being killed, and as such, it really amounts to a mock execution, which is illegal under international law, said a spokesman for Human Rights Watch. Human rights. Human rights might be behind. Don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? Good news on the Iraq front. Iran and Iraq have signed an agreement on bolstering security cooperation. Isn't that nice? Could that be what Ahmed Chalabi was up to when he went to Tehran before coming to Washington? He's so good. The agreement was inked by, well, who cares? Under the agreement, the two sides will work together for handling security-related issues and holding training courses in the field. Iran and Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, together again for the first time. Insurgent attacks are costing Iraq about 500,000 barrels of oil a day, almost one-third of its daily output. The loss is significant because before the war, the Bush administration and Iraqi exiles said oil exports would provide the money to help rebuild the country and offset the cost of the occupation. The oil revenues could bring between $50 billion and $100 billion over the course of the next 2 or 3 years, Paul Wolfowitz told Congress in March of 2003. We're dealing with a country that can really finance its own reconstruction, and relatively soon. Unquote. It's a huge drag on the economy, says the president of the Trade Bank of Iraq. The oil export through Turkey pipeline is a regular target, at least 350,000 barrels a day. You can imagine how much money we are losing, unquote. We're not the only ones with rough treatment, ladies and gentlemen. That's the good news. British-trained police operating in Basra have tortured at least 2 civilians to death with electric drills. I've heard of do-it-yourself, but this is ridiculous. The Independent on Sunday quotes John Reid, the Secretary of Defense in England, admitting he knows of, quote, alleged deaths in custody and other, quote, serious prisoner abuse at Al Jamiat police station. Militia-dominated police who were recruited by Britain are believed to have tortured at least 2 men to death there. Their bodies were later found with drill holes in their arms, legs, and skulls. They were suspected of collaborating with coalition forces. Despite being pressed very hard by Britain, however, the Iraqi authorities in Basra are failing to even investigate incidents of torture and murder by police, according to British cabinet ministers. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, news outside the bubble. Before 8,500 U.S. and Iraqi soldiers methodically swept through Tal Afar 2 months ago in the year's largest counterinsurgency forces, offensive, commanders described the northern city as a logistics hub for fighters, including foreigners entering from Syria 40 miles to the west. When the operation wound down in mid-September, nearly 200 insurgents had been killed, close to 1,000 detained, according to the Washington Post, but interrogations and other analyses carried out in recent weeks showed none of those captured was from outside Iraq. The 3rd Armored Cavalry last detained a foreign fighter in June, ladies and gentlemen, in June. News from outside the bubble, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
I heard a gray-haired old music musicians say that on the vaudeville circuit back in his day, they said the two worst nights you could ever play were Sunday night and Memphis. Well, I could sing and play. Thought I'd try my luck. I did the best that I could, and no one gave a damn. So I packed up my suitcase and sold my truck and said goodbye to Memphis. Man, I got going, cause the going was tough. So why'd I come back if I'd had enough? They said the River City was built on a bluff. Guess my bluff got called by Memphis. Now I'm doing this every night, Beale Street day. Set up in a palace that's fit for a king. They let me leave my rig, let me play and sing, and it pays my rent in Memphis. We all eat till we're stuffed, and then we eat some more. We drink till we fall down dead on the floor. We know what they say about living that way, but we choose not to remember. And it's hotter than hell. Don't romanticize it, cause we all despise it. Stay inside till November. Summertime, and the living is unbelievably unpleasant. Nothing's jumping, and the whole band is high. My daddy's rich, and my mama's good looking. So why, pretty baby, why ain't I? Nobody listened to me anyway. This is where I'm from, and it's where I'll stay. My heart and soul's in Memphis. But if you think you can get me a gig, and it pays pretty well, in a Paris cafe or a New York hotel, or some Tokyo nightclub, hey man, what the hell? Come talk to me in Memphis. Hey, I wouldn't come back till fall. If I dig it off my back, I'm back, I love. But I dream sometimes of Memphis. I would dream sometimes of Memphis. Sure, I dream sometimes of Memphis. Might be a nightmare, but I dream sometimes of Memphis.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Danbury, Connecticut, the News Times has apologized and fired a copy editor who put an offensive caption on its webpage under a photo of a girls' high school soccer team. The Immaculate High girls' team was celebrating a goal scored in a championship-clinching win November 5th. The newspaper's website published a photograph of the jubilant team, but said that in the caption that the team was celebrating a teammate's decision to, quote, come out of the closet as a lesbian, unquote. It was a flagrant, awful violation of every journalistic principle, said Paul Steinmetz, the paper's editor. It's just embarrassing to us and untenable. The copy editor, who was not identified, was goofing around and didn't realize the caption had gone online, Steinmetz said. We couldn't get it off the website as fast as we wanted to, he said. Although the caption appeared only on the website, the newspaper apologized both online and in its print edition. The paper also met with the family and school officials and wrote a letter of apology to the soccer team. The Dateline Atlanta, the Republican legislator who sponsored Georgia's controversial voter ID bill in the state Senate, says he's willing to make changes to the law. State Senator Cecil Staton, Republican of Macon, said changes could include letting local governments, issue photo identification cards that would let people who don't have a driver's license vote. His comments came amid criticism of a document that suggests one of the law's backers had race on her mind. Sue Burmeister from Augusta told Justice Department officials that blacks in her area typically only vote if they are paid. In a statement Friday, she sought to clarify the remarks. While I do believe voter fraud is rampant in our state, I no way believe that African Americans in my district or around the state only vote when they are paid to do so. If this misrepresentation has offended anyone, she said, I apologize. Beleaguered Sony BMG Records will temporarily suspend the manufacture of CDs protected with technology from First Four Internet and re-examine its copy protection strategy, the media giant said on Friday. The company has been widely criticized by consumers, security experts, and digital rights advocates for the surreptitious copy protection programs that Sony's CDs install on computers, on customers' computers. Digital rights advocates and consumer attorneys are preparing nearly half a dozen legal actions against the music giant. The company stood by its right to protect its music. The software it installs screws up Windows computers only. Where is Sony's apology? Did they apologize? Didn't really apologize. Say they regret. Not a real apology, ladies and gentlemen. They're thrown out of the feature. Newly appointed Mobile, Alabama County Commissioner Juan Chastang said this week he would be a strong conservative leader for his district and apologized to Governor Bob Riley for not disclosing that the personnel board in his county suspended him from a job as a Mobile police officer after determining that he tried to bribe another officer. That's an apology, ladies and gentlemen. A group that stepped forward to help the victims of Hurricane Katrina has finally been reimbursed for its hard work. The Washington, D.C. Central Kitchen provided 27,000 meals to hurricane evacuees housed at the Washington, D.C. Armory. After weeks of red tape and paperwork, the Department of Human Services sent out the check. A representative has apologized for the delay. Hey, isn't that the same department whose secretary said we're not as prepared as we need to be? Yes, it is. You stayed listening through this entire show. You remembered that? Dateline Waco, Texas, a school superintendent was arrested for allegedly placing a hidden video camera resembling an air freshener dispenser in a women's bathroom at the school administration office. Danny Doyen, 46, told investigators he bought the camera with a school district credit card and placed it in a restroom to obtain nude photos of female employees. Oh, well, all right then. At least he had a good reason. Doyen has been superintendent in a town of about 1,500 residents about 20 miles south of Waco since 2002. The school board issued a statement. The board deeply regrets this occurrence, wants to assure the community that all steps will be taken to assure the safety and well-being of all students, employees, and visitors. That's a regret, but it feels like an apology. A Roman Catholic group called off a planned boycott of Walmart on Friday after the world's largest retailer apologized for an employee's email that said Christmas is a product of a mixture of world religions. This is a sweet victory for the Catholic League, Christians in general, and people of all faiths, said Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League. Walmart earlier apologized after a customer service employee wrote in an email to a customer that Christmas was a product of traditions ranging from Siberian shamanism to Visigoth calendars. The customer complained that the retailer had stopped using Merry Christmas as a greeting. The email written by someone identified only as Kirby said Walmart had to act as a global organization in a world with many different practices. Kirby wrote, Santa is also borrowed from the Caucasus, mistletoe from the Celts, Yule log from the Goths, the thyme from the Visigoths, and the tree from the worship of Baal. Baal. The chief of UCLA's medical school apologized this week for the apparent sale of parts of bodies that were donated to the school and announced steps to ensure such practices do not recur. Can we at least get an alumni discount if it does recur? Because I would, you know, I would like some Bruin. These alleged crimes violate the trust of the donors, their families, and UCLA, said the vice chancellor of UCLA Medical Services and Sciences. We are deeply sorry. An accusation of treason in the heat of debate brought a conference of Iraqi politicians to a halt for 15 minutes in Cairo, illustrating the delicate task mediators face, keeping them all in the same room. Members of the mainly Shiite Muslim and United Arab Iraq Alliance walked out of the first closed session of the three-day reconciliation meeting and threatened to leave for good if Arab League organizers did not extract an apology. They did. Yeah, it's not. There's no history of sectarian strife there. That was Paul Wolfowitz? No, that was it was one of them. Maybe Elliot Abrams. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Woodward apologized to the Washington Post's executive editor for failing to tell him for more than 2 years that a senior Bush administration official had told Woodward about Valerie Plame, even as the investigation of those leaks mushroomed into a national scandal. Woodward, assistant managing editor and best-selling author, said he told Leonard Downey Jr. that he, Woodward, held back the information from Downey because he was worried about being subpoenaed by the special counsel in the case. Quote, I apologize because I should have told him about this much sooner, Woodward said in an interview. I explained in detail I was trying to protect my sources. I hunkered down. I'm in the habit of keeping secrets. Unquote. Further quote, I didn't want anything out there that was going to get me subpoenaed, unquote. I'm in the habit of keeping secrets, says a reporter. Interesting. Who then is in the habit of letting us know what's going on? Woodward is planning to explain more. Well, he gave a delivered a statement to the Washington Post, his employer, gave an interview to Time Magazine, a competitor of Newsweek, owned by the Washington Post. Odd. Interesting. Interesting. And he's planning to go on Larry King's program on Monday night on CNN, owned by Time Warner. Interesting. Competitor of Newsweek, owned by the Washington Post. Interesting. But in case you can't wait for Monday night.
Now, live, it's Larry King Live.
We're live in New York, where tomorrow night I'll be hosting the Spina Bifida Foundation semi-annual Black and Blue Ball. So in for me tomorrow night, Ryan Seacrest will have Carson Daly for the full hour. You'll think you're seeing double. Tonight, an old friend of the program is back to talk about his role in the Valerie Plame leak investigation. Speaking of investigations, he's the greatest investigative journalist of our time. Maybe we'll get around to his visit to Beverly Hills to investigate why the pastrami at Nathan Al's is the best anywhere in the world. From our Washington Bureau, the great Bob Woodward.
Good evening, Larry.
Bob, do you ever think it's kind of weird the great investigative reporter is now involved in somebody else's investigation? I mean, it's like the loan shark owing money to the mob.
Larry, it's a very unusual development for a reporter to become part of the story. Normally, what I like to do is talk to my sources in complete confidentiality and then report what they say and otherwise stay completely out of the way.
Oh, you got some great sources.
Well, I have to say, if you've been in Washington as long as I have, and you don't have very good sources, you should probably get into another line of work. So, yes, Larry, I'd much rather be speculating on someone else's motives here with you tonight rather than talking about myself.
Is that why you didn't tell your editor, Len Downey, that one of your sources had told you that Joe Wilson's wife worked for the CIA more than a month before all this became public because you knew it was going to blow up and put you in the hot bird seat?
You know, Larry, I'd love to go into great depth and detail detail with you about it, just exactly why I did what I did, and maybe more importantly, why I didn't do what I didn't do. Yeah. But I'm now constrained by the advice of my legal representatives, and they've told me I can't say anything about this case beyond what I said in my statement in the Washington Post and what was in my interview with Time Magazine.
Well, your lawyer wasn't constraining you when Time Magazine called?
Well, what I can tell you, Larry, is that they didn't call me.
Saturday night, a repeat of a full hour with Reba McEntire and Colin Powell discussing the new crusade against bird flu. Bob, how did you feel when you saw the story in your own newspaper revealing that you had a role in a story you were sitting here analyzing with me just before the indictments were handed down last month?
Well, Larry, I felt disappointed.
What? Were you disappointed in yourself or in the Post or in me or what?
I was disappointed in the situation, Larry. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you in our last discussion that this wasn't going to turn out to be a very important investigation.
I remember. I had on the yellow suspenders.
That's right. And so I was disappointed that I was now suddenly caught up in something that wasn't really that important. I guess you could say that that was a blow to my ego.
Pocatello, Idaho. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
You got a question for the great Bob Woodward.
Larry, I just want to know if he sees Carl Bernstein much anymore. I loved the movies they did together.
Bob, Carl lives in New York. You live in Washington. Anything to that?
Well, Larry, we went our separate ways many years ago.
Yeah? You came together for the Big Throat unveiling earlier this year.
Yes, we did. But that was more for publicity purposes than to do journalism per se.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Carl has the same interest in cultivating sources that I've had over the years, and I guess you could say that people like the kind of journalism that benefits from the kind of access that I've had.
You think after this you're still going to have that kind of access?
That's something that I think people should be concerned about, no. But in my particular case, I don't think my sources are too worried about this. I think if you look down the line to where this all leads, I think you can understand why they're not too concerned. But as I learned with Bill Casey, I really shouldn't say too much about what my sources think without actually discussing that with them.
What you're going to do?
I can't tell you that.
We got the best panel in the world to analyze and discuss Bob Woodward's interview. From ABC and The View, the great Barbara Walters. From CBS News, the longtime evening news anchor Dan Rather. And from CNN Center in Atlanta. Great to see something originating out of there. Brings back memories. The former Speaker of the House and author of the new book, Winning the Future, Newt Gingrich. Barbara, what do you think about what Bob said so far?
Bob, could I just ask you a question?
Of course, Barbara.
You've been accused of flattering your sources. Do you think there is such a thing as flattering the subject of an interview too much? Because I really don't.
No, I understand, and I find myself wondering if that question is really a form of you flattering me, Barbara.
Oh, this guy's deep. Dan Rader, does any of this bother you?
Larry, if I started in on my list of what's bothering me about this, we'd be here longer than a Galveston sermon. But, Brother Woodward, I think the whole country learned a lesson from the scandal that gave you your start and me a kick upstairs, and that's that the cover-up is always worse than the crime.
Even if there is no crime.
Oh, especially if there's no crime, then the cover-up's all you got.
Yeah. I think what Dan's getting at is, didn't you think not telling about your contacts would ultimately make it worse for you?
That's not
Larry, if you're asking me would I do it all over again exactly the same way I did handle it, I don't know if that's something I can feel free to answer right now.
And that was
with respect. I was asking something.
What I can say, because I've already said it, is that I didn't tell the management of my paper about all this sooner because I didn't want to say anything that could get me subpoenaed.
Well, can't get a better reason than that. Who wants to be subpoenaed? Newt, you've got a new book out. Mm-hmm. What do you make of all this?
Larry, much like the rest of our communication environment, what we think of as traditional journalism is going through a real paradigm shift. If if you read Deming and Drucker.
Well, you know me, Mr. Speaker. I'd rather write a book than read one.
Well, it's clear from even just hearing about them that in an era of transnational information flows through increasingly personalized and portabilized communication nodes, the entire concept of a printed newspaper on paper that can have reporters, that have sources that need to be protected by a promise of confidentiality, that whole concept is open to question.
And?
And I think, Bob, and all of us are going to have to think more in terms of journalistic polyrhythms.
Bob, is that something you can talk about?
Oh, very much so, Larry. I think, as Mark Twain once put it, the obituary of the newspaper as an institution is a tad premature.
I don't think he said tad.
Maybe not, Mr. Speaker, but I think the institution is so important to the policy-making community that if we didn't have such an institution, they might very well be forced to reinvent it.
Well, if they haven't already.
Larry, I think to get back to what I was saying earlier, just as you can't get guests on your show if you Martin Bashir them to death, you can't keep sources if you're going to burn them by letting people know who they are and why they're talking to you.
Well, I think Barbara has put her finger on it, and I just wish I was free to tell you why.
No, I think we know why. That's what she does. Coming up, the best in the business at being Anderson Cooper. That would be the great Anderson Cooper. Bob, I hope we can have you back soon when you can answer more questions, or even before then. For the panel, for Bob Woodward.
Winning the future, working on the paperback version right now, working on it right here on this tiny device.
From New York, good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, speculating a few moments ago about how you get more roadside bomb diffusers into the Army, but what would the pay scale be, do you think, for a private contractor who working as an interrogator over there? This is now because, according to the Asia Times, Lockheed has a no-bid contract for this work. According to ads on several websites frequented by current and former military personnel, the working as a contract interrogator offers an annual salary between $70,000 and $90,000 a year, plus a $2,000 sign-up bonus, $1,000 for a mid-tour break. Yeah, that feels good. And a $2,000 bonus for completing the normal six-month deployment. They work side-by-side with military interrogators using 17 officially sanctioned techniques, ranging from love of comrades to fear up harsh, which is violently throwing detainees to the ground. Apply now, won't you? Is that more than school teachers get? I don't know. But these guys have work up to 14-hour days. So come on, ladies and gentlemen, be fair. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations. Am I going to do the list today? I don't think so. I do it all the time, and it bores me. But you know where to find this program. And if you don't, check public radio, www.publicradiofan.com, where all your favorite public radio programs from around the world are listed. If you'd like to be on our mailing list for occasional and very low-impact email blasts, you can find the way to sign up for that at harryshearer.com/LeShow. But you can get this program as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow in every other way known to man. And if you'd agree to be with me then, I'd appreciate it. All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. LeShow's internet services by Steve Mack. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. LeShow playlists available at harryshearer.com. Different view of the media, join me through the week at www.huffingtonpost.com/eatthepress. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.